they wanted to basically say, our religion is supreme to us. We hold this above all other things. And in that sense, it's like a human thing of like, I got my tribe and my tribe is better than your tribe. And all of the people are doing this. So when we talk about ideological warfare, I believe in my mind, it's a tribal survival tool that humans use to gain confidence and unity and enough resolve to die and hold something above anything else that makes a tribe very powerful. And if a tribe doesn't have an awareness of that or even use it, it's still being used by other intelligent tribes.
This is Infants on Thrones.
Baby steps.
You want someone to preach to?
The philosophies of men.
I like magical toys.
You love religion, do you?
Mingled with humor.
I don't believe in them.
There will be many willing to preach to you the philosophies of men mingled with humor.
We are evolving.
Baby steps.
You can buy anything in this world of money.
Look for the good in everything. Look for the people who will set your soul free. It always seems impossible until it's done. Look for the good in everyone.
All right, Josh. We're recording, and I want to tell you the thing that I published this last Saturday on April 6th, and when I sent it to you, I said, happy birthday, Jesus' real birthday. I did that on purpose on April 6th because of like the 1830 birth of the Mormon church kind of thing. Like, I just wanted to commemorate that in a silly way with my channeling, because I think that Joseph Smith was channeling, you know, what, however you interpret what that,
what do we mean by it? What do we mean by it?
Yeah. What are you asking that as a rhetorical question? Or you really
both? Like, I wonder what you specifically mean. And I think it would be good for a listener to know what we mean by that.
What I mean by it is the stuff unconsciously that's coming up through you and your channeling experience, you're tapping into something, it's not outside. It's not separate from. It's inside. It's part of. And I think ways of trying to make meaning. It's a meaning making art form.
It's kind of like spontaneous, inspirational, kind of creative tapping into.
Yeah.
Someone might call it listening to their muse. I think they felt it was an external force in some way.
Yeah.
I've heard people talk about, like authors talk about, that they're thankful for the characters of their story that told them their story.
Yeah, yeah.
That they felt they were listening to something as they were writing it down.
Yeah. And anytime I've done, like creative things, like creating a character, I've created lots of characters throughout my life, and they all take on their own, you know, as I become more familiar with them, it's like, I kind of know them. I can think through their eyes, you know.
Yeah.
I'm thinking through their eyes, Josh. And anyway, so I published it on April 6th, but we recorded it like in February. And I didn't listen to it for 2 months because I just had this pit in my stomach with all this, you know. And I talk about that at the beginning of it. There's just like so much fear around it. But when I did listen back to it, I really appreciated the conversation that we had around it. And so I wanted to follow up on it. And that was like the first of seven that was like an Arcturian history. And I said in it, I want to do all seven. And I've kind of changed my mind. I don't want to do all seven. But I did, after I listened to that, I channeled for the first time in 2 months because I just had been so like down on the whole thing. And I was really inspired by things that we said. And so there are bits and pieces of that that came out in this, but this one I called The Secret of Spiritual Warfare. And I want to read this one with you and have a conversation about it, because I think there's a lot of things in here that are important to you. I'll say, or I'm hoping that as we go through, there'll be some things in here that you'll resonate with, and kind of talk of, like, ideas on heresy and dogma and ideological conflict and, you know, things like that.
I talked about it before in the past on one of our episodes, but it's kind of like saying the phrase, I think it's been going blowing up on Twitter as this kind of a current event, although it may have faded over the last week or so. But people were posting Jesus is Lord or Christ is King. And it's kind of like a I ha it's what I joked about with like how I wear the cross. It's like I want to walk around with a shirt that says Jesus is Lord, or post it on my wall that says Christ is King or something. It's basically, to me, is just saying I got mine. Like I have my own valid belief system too.
But are you talking about like a virtue signaling that was happening around Easter? Is
Yeah,
it?
well, it wasn't, I wouldn't even call it virtue signaling. I call it was like a Christian uprising on Twitter where they wanted to basically say our religion is supreme to us. We hold this above all other things. We hold our Christian values above man, above government, above other religions. And in that sense, it's like a human thing of like, I got my tribe, and my tribe is better than your tribe. And all of the people are doing this. So when we talk about ideological warfare, I believe in my mind, it's a tribal survival tool that humans use to gain confidence and unity and enough resolve to die and hold something above anything else that makes a tribe very powerful. And if a tribe doesn't have an awareness of that or even use it, it's still being used by other intelligent tribes. And so this was to me like a monkey, oh, like we're all kind of
Beating their
doing our thing,
chest.
beating their chest, showing their fealty to their thing that they place above you. And that's what I was talking about in a way is I have mine too. You think I'm going to hell and you want to cancel me. I'm going to tell you that you're going to burn in hell forever in a pile of cum and feces or whatever they say. That's it's a aggressive human communal ego thing, I think.
But when, okay, like when you say something like that, how much do you really mean, and how much of it is tongue in cheek, facetious, like just putting
I'm
up your middle
saying,
finger saying fuck you in the way that you want to fuck everybody else?
yeah, I'm saying I'm just as valid as you,
Yeah.
and my group's just as valid as
But you
your
don't really
group.
think that they're going to like burn forever.
No, I
Okay.
don't believe that actually. No, I
Okay.
don't believe that. I don't believe that they're doing that, but I'm basically saying with those whatever level of contempt you're capable of holding for me, I am
Yeah.
happy to hold it for you.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not even because I feel bad because I want to be a stoic, but that maybe is a little failing to live up to my values. But there's a level of equal like disdain I'm capable of harboring for you if that's what we're going to do. If we're going to have something else happen where there's a mutual meeting of the minds and an interaction where we both think that we're real and we can hear and have our own original thoughts and interface with each other, then I don't need to bring that out. But to me, it almost feels like, and it's funny because it's called this in the scriptures, but it's like a shield. It's like the shield of I can behave instrumentally to my external environment and hold myself in equal regard to you. And that
Yeah, but
is
your shield is a shield with like razor blades and spikes.
it's but that's if I'm reflecting in the moment here, I'm saying that's a lesser value self reacting and wanting to be violent because it's like from fear and anger, as we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
The more divine part of me says the shield is most powerful when it's not anything like that. It's just gentle and it's there.
All right.
And it's a holding oneself in a with an extreme amount of dignity and regard for the self that holds you as equal to any that could approach you. That would be what I'm, if we boil it down, that's what I think it's valuable. But it ties back to our theme in this. It's that there are ideas that people are bombarding each other with and attempting to dominate one another with in attempt to gain influence, I think is the most gentle way of saying it, both on the world around them, on others, and in a way that's an exporting of the internal narratives that a person holds.
Yeah, it's boiling. It's boiling up all that ideological conflict. Seems like it to me. So I'm going to start reading this, Josh. And like I did last time, if I start feeling like really insecure, I'm going to stop and ask you for your feedback. But if there's any time that like you want to stop, please stop me.
Okay, I'm opening it so I've got it to
So
look at as well.
this is actually it's been published on the Arcturian Playground. It's episode 90, and it's called The Secret of Spiritual Warfare. And it starts off like this. Yes, we are the Arcturian Collective Thingy, and it has been a while, has it not, man in the chair? You have been keeping us at bay. You have not been in the mood, and yet here we are, to poke our heads in during this time between the eclipses, as you say, where the energy is fervent. And we ride that energy into you as a way to remind you that this fiction that you are creating is a spiritual practice for you. And this evening, the reason that you had so much gung-ho to engage with us once again was this seed that we planted in your mind on the secret of spiritual warfare. We gave you a glimpse of it, as it were, tempting you to come and sit and engage in this idea, to flesh it out in your mind through this process which you have created, which is your way of grounding yourself to yourself, these ideas which excite you and spring up from within you. The secret of spiritual warfare is what we will be discussing. We are the Arcturian Collective Thingy. We are the collective intelligence of the Arcturus solar system. All forms of life from all periods and times throughout the history of the star. We are a collective intelligence which exists outside of space and time, where this experience that we're broadcasting, in a sense, is one of an infinite number of other instances in which we are a part and aware of. And you too are a part of it, and yet only nominally aware of it. Those of you who are sensing that it is that to which you are connected and to which all are connected, and finding those ways back home, which is truly where you always are. We are the intelligence which was formed and came to this realization of who we collectively are through the collective experiences of all forms of life within the Arcturus solar system. And we shine our light upon those of our brothers and sisters in this galaxy, which you would consider other stars, yours being one of them, to share with you our experience and our perspective as your own star is maturing and being bombarded with the influence of all other stars and all other ways in which they came to a collective understanding of themselves. And some of these ways that they came to an understanding of themselves vary differently and often, not often, but occasionally, violently conflict, a clash of ideologies, you might call it. We could speak of battles between these ideologies, and you might think of armies and swords and shields and these images from your warlike past. When we think of battles or struggles, however, it's more like a bubble which is rising up through water. And as you watch it, it wobbles, it moves, as there are pressures within it which push and pull and reactions against it from outside, the viscosity and whatnot. It's all a part of the natural way of things as they interact with one another. And we, from our perspective outside of space and time, are able to look at your experiences in quite a clinical way, you might say. There is a distance. We're looking at it and we're seeing it as patterns. All right, I'm going to stop there for a minute and just ask you what's going on with you as you're listening to this.
I'm thinking about the nature of these things, and it got me think, like, I think verse 6 says, and some of the ways that they came to an understanding of themselves very differently and often, not often, but occasionally violently conflict
yeah.
or conflict. And I think there's something about, they're almost, you know, we talk about an egregore or something, some kind of metaphysical entity. It's almost like there's a genetics to this. And so when I'm thinking of them tracing or looking at patterns, it's like, in a sense, reading metaphysical genetic code. And it takes on almost force outside of itself to keep imposing itself again now in the minds of the people that become one with it. And so I almost think of them just like evolving creatures. And in a sense, they're always in competition. Like I think about this conflict or when they violently conflict. And I think at times, like I wonder, I don't know, I wonder what the consciousness of animals is like and how they view the world. But for humans, there's a conflict when there's a rivaling. I don't know. Humans do it in their own, within our own selves, and we do it within couples, and we do it within groups. And so again, it like has different order, magnitude of order. But in a sense, it's always in opposition for resource or attempting to establish itself, which is in a sense a conflict or trying to emerge and hold form. And then at times they compete directly with each other, I would say. But they're always in a sense competing for resource to continue their existence. So like one big conflict I had that I had to work through a lot was when I encountered, it's funny that we talked about anger earlier, because it was a rare moment where I had an angry reaction, but I was walking my dog Gretel when she was a puppy. And my girlfriend was stressing me out at the time about her potty training. And I was trying to
Gretel's
get
potty training or your girlfriend's potty
her
training?
yeah, my girlfriend. No, with Gretel's potty training, my girlfriend was stressing me out. And so I was trying to get Gretel to go potty at night, and she was very little, and I was pulling her and pulling her. And at one moment I pulled her and she just went flying and landed on her side. And it just made me have a reaction of trying to figure out, it really shook me to the core of like who I am, because I wasn't prepared to encounter that I would do something like that to this little creature that I felt so much love and innocence that I project on, and maybe she is and maybe she isn't, but the idea that I could get frustrated in a moment, cause her pain, created a I don't want to use the word trauma, but a dissonance in me that was very difficult, because I had to then reestablish a story or a narrative about, or an ideology about who Josh is and what I am as a person and what I'm capable of. And in a sense, and this also I think goes back to what we're talking about earlier as well, it's like an ego reaction. It's a me. There's this me that is good or bad, or this thing, or I have to have a relationship to my behaviors. And if I organize them rigidly as me, then all of a sudden there's not a way to like move on or get back to the, there's this unresolved dilemma of self-relationship.
Are you saying because there's parts of yourself that you accept and parts of you that you don't accept? And like this part that would get angry at your dog, you would not accept?
Yeah, well, it's different than this accept or not. It's almost like I'm attempting to create and update the narrative on who I am. And I've had an event that I wasn't prepared to encounter, which was I encountered a part of myself that's not easily made sense of. And so I'm trying to reestablish the narrative on who this guy is. But in a sense, all of that is still an ego reaction. It's about me as an object and this thing that I make sense of. And so I'm having this. And I think from ego emerges these ideologies, because they exist about not the story we tell ourselves, but the story, the broader narrative of what reality is. And so that's what I'm talking about, or what your verse brought up in me, is the nature of these things is always a constant flux of something iterating, a pattern that's continuing in the I hate that this word's been taken by Facebook, but the metaverse, literal spiritual world. And so the spiritual world doesn't have the same kind of material structure that's easily static, at least for a time, or appears in stasis here. I don't think it has quite that form or shape. And so conflict is one of the features, but I guess it brought up in me that the other feature is that they're always in flux for their ongoing maintenance and continuation, and it's much more dynamic and less stable, and that has to be an ongoing battle just to continue to exist. I was calling it earlier like a battle of resources, but it's more like a flame that needs to keep burning to continue, and its shape is always kind of changing. And when it runs out of fuel, people, community, whatever, or it gets consumed, it changes and disappears.
So let me tell you what I pulled out of that. And there's two things in particular that really interested me. One was when you started calling something a trauma, and you said, no, I don't want to think of this as a trauma. I'm going to call this dissonance. That's interesting to me because it kind of comes up later in what I wrote, where like I'm thinking about trauma in a very broad sense. And so I'm curious why you would not want to use the word trauma, but kind of downgrade it to dissonance.
Well,
that was that. And then I want to say the second thing, and then I'll turn it over to you. The second thing that really interested me was when you talked about your ego response, and it was almost like there, you could probably think in that moment you had a lot of different responses, kind of as a physiological response, like your heart rate increasing, and you know, there are probably several different ways that your body responded to it, but you singled out specifically the ego response. And I think what you meant by that is that something came that your ego didn't think was a part of you, that you couldn't make sense of it. And that in itself created this dissonance or mini trauma to who you thought that you were. That's what I pulled out of what you said. What do you think about that, Josh?
So first, the word trauma, if you have a very clinical sense for it, I'm getting a random call. If you have kind of a clinical sense of it, then I think the word's okay to use. The reason I didn't, and the clinical sense I would have is like any forcing injurious thing external to you, like a scrape could be a trauma. It doesn't have to mean like I lost my arm.
Right.
So the way that it gets colloquially used is kind of a label for a thing, and it doesn't quite describe it. It's almost just, it's lost some of its specificity. And so it's, my reaction was wanting to be able to describe what was going on rather than get it subsumed by, a cultural relationship to that word that I think is not, it's become a label. And I'm trying to think, what's its function? It means bad thing happened to me, or maybe it means I've been harmed. And I don't necessarily like those because I think those are attitudes about an event. But if there's a clinical and precise description of what happened, then I'm interested in it. So in the sense that, and the reason I chose ego is because I think that's what causes what, that's the location of what might be called a trauma. If we look at it as like this specific trauma's function was, I had to grapple with the good, bad. And if you don't have a more developed gray area to just be, and you think what you did is bad, which I did, then that becomes the thing that's injurious to the ego. And the reaction comes to try to comprehend or get rid of the bad, versus integrating it in a way that allows it to be a part of you. And then you can kind of become more gray and you can tolerate it, and it's not experienced as injurious anymore. And the ego reaction can prevent that because it can say, no, this is all my girlfriend's fault. She's to blame. I was a victim of her thing. Or there might be a way that you do that. You make it so that it gets shoved down. It doesn't get brought in and integrated. And so what I actually was able to do in time was tolerate my nervous system reaction because I become anxious and fearful if I am bad. And I don't look at what's actually going on. And so I'm highly reactive to this. And it's then an ego reaction because I'm trying to make a new narrative about myself, but I have to cope with what would be the scrape of the outside world was I did a thing that I have a reaction as bad.
Yeah.
And so when you're able to get your nervous system stabilized, then you, and you have enough support to look at the thing, then you can say, oh, here's the updated story that's I'm able to digest. I can get frustrated and react to things in a way that I'm not proud of, that I don't like, if I don't learn. And the way of now knowing that lets me take responsibility for that part of me. And taking responsibility for myself is how I live my most aware, best life. So instead of telling a story about what my actions mean about me, I can say something like, I did something I wasn't proud of, and I don't like that, and I feel bad. And now I'm not going to make that into a story about who Josh is. I'm just going to say, I'm aware I'm capable of being an asshole to a dog if I get too frustrated. And I don't like that, but it's part of me. And so, in order to prevent that, because I don't want to mistreat my dog, I have to take time to take care of my own emotions as they come up.
And the mechanism behind those emotions coming up are so deep and complicated. I'm very, very fascinated because I think there's definitely this biologic, genetic component that goes way back through your genetic line and history, survival of the fittest, habits of your species that are just kind of ingrained in you, all the cultural program, just like so many deep things in there. And when I'm creating this fictional Arcturian collective thingy perspective, I like looking at those things, like trying to, like, in that moment, you're not aware of all of the history behind what informed that split second decision to you. But then you've got this, trauma or whatever you want to call it, of I didn't behave in the way that I think that I'm supposed to behave. And now what do I do with that? And
Yeah, the reaction is to try to make myself good again, and because I first made myself bad, which neither one is true. That's both ego. And so what I can do is my method out is get the nervous system regulated enough, get enough support to be able to experience myself more totally. And then I can realize I get frustrated and do dumb things. That is a thing that I'm capable of. I can work to develop myself in new ways now, as a result of understanding that that's a thing that can happen. There's other things that can happen that I do that are not within my values. I may not even be aware of, but I can just keep living and paying attention and trying to become as aware of myself as possible. And only then can I begin to develop my values through the ways that I practice behaving and exploring and reflecting on. And since then, I'm happy to report that I've been able to behave in a lot more kindness to Gretel, and also have gotten frustrated and not been as hard on myself as a result of that experience. So it goes both ways. It's both I'm working on my values to live in harmony with Gretel in a way that feels good to me, and I'm not freaking out about who I am in a sense of good or bad or the narrative. In the event that I don't live up to that, I just say, oh, that's a thing I can improve now. And I'm glad that I feel this revulsion to it because it's not something I want to do.
All right. Well, thank you
But
for that.
but there is like all these other things too, I think, that are there that you were pointing out, which is we're stuck in a reality and a history. And Heidegger called this thrownness, which is you're placed in language, in history, in culture, in location, all outside of your choosing, and they all massively affect the experience that you have. And to your point, you're also thrown
Did you
into
say
a.
thrownness?
Yes, the Germans did this all the
Okay,
time.
so
They just.
this is gives me another dimension of Infants on Thrones then.
Yeah.
It really like popped open for me. I like that.
That's hilarious. Well, he means it like throw, right?
Oh,
You.
throne.
Like, so I thought you were making a pun, like a play on words, like, 'cause throne and throne. But
Well,
like,
now we are.
yeah. So it's a good pun. Yeah, the thrown, like where you're tossed into a field, like a rock thrown into a field, the thrownness is an element of existence itself, which is all these things you're talking about, which is language, culture, history, physical location, physical body, genetics of that body, epigenetics and cultural memories of families, the relationship that you have in the womb, biologically, and how what your mother's environment's like, and how that affects, all the things that are permeating and going through the fetal area, so in the womb, yeah. So anyway, that came up when you're talking about that, and of course I know that affected all of the different meaning-making apparatuses and reactions, and what does it mean, and these biological habits that we, you know, when Gretel, to bring her up again, when she takes a shit and gets a dingleberry, or there's like a human hair hanging out of her butthole that's keeping the poop tied on, she gets very ashamed, and she'll like tuck her butt under, and like I always have to get a bag and like remove the poop and like help her, because she will have a biological historical dog response which says this is bad, don't.
Is that doggy ego?
It's some kind of thing, like we're talking, it's some kind of reaction of
It's an awareness.
don't be around the others with the shit on your ass,
Yeah.
which is not that different than what we feel in its most primal
It's quite
organic.
anal retentive.
Yeah, I mean, he was onto something.
All right, I'm going to keep reading here, Josh.
Okay.
So this is the Arcturians once again saying, even though they look at things in a clinical distance way, they say we can empathize with you and we can feel what you feel. What we cannot do is forget all the rest of what we experience and focus on only what we are experiencing when we experience what you are experiencing. It's a drop in the bucket, as it were, for us. Therefore, if it ever seems that we're being flippant or unsympathetic, that is definitely not the case. We greatly admire you for what you're experiencing, and therefore, we wish to arm you, as it were, with the secret of spiritual warfare. And what do we mean by spiritual? This is a word from your world, which often signifies things which are not material, things which are part of existence, or at least believed to be part of existence, whether they are tangible or not, as the common way of viewing it goes. And that is what we mean. We mean those parts of you which are very real that you are not aware of. Your advances in neuroscience have shown you in recent years the way that your own neurons in your brain communicate with each other through synapses. They link with one another and they form patterns inside these neural networks, which you access and they access you. It's all part of one organism. And these neural pathways are the battlefield, as it were, for the spiritual warfare. By spiritual, we mean those processes within your brain, those things which your neurons are doing, which are non-material. You can get a glimpse of them through your fMRI machines and other ways of scanning the vibrations which are occurring between neurons, their communication networks, as it were, these neurons themselves being living, evolving things. And we have said before that we view the human being as the neuron of Mother Earth coming into its own. That is a different story, but it is relevant to the metaphor that we're creating on the spirit or on the secret of spiritual warfare. For if one understands that all the experiences, the very real experiences, the emotional hardships and joys, all aspects of life, when understood through your emerging science of neurology, can be, we hate to say reduced, for there is nothing reductionist about the experience of life, but you're able to see the way that they are connected to these living neurons within your brain with what they are doing, this community of billions which have evolved over time, and have been hijacked in a way, but not really. For there is truly no way to hijack the life that evolves as it continues to adjust and adapt to all forms of struggle or attack or difficult environmental forces. There is always a push and a pull and viscosity of conflict, whatever that conflict may be. And therefore, your brains are living colonies of neurons, which have learned over long, long, long periods of time in their physical form the things which work for them and the things which do not. And the things which work best for them have been to cooperate and communicate together in certain ways. The emergence of this cooperation ensures the safety and well-being of all the cells within the colony. They create various functions that allow the organism, be it a human or a dog or a giraffe or a fish or an insect or a mushroom or any form of life, a bacteria, an Arcturian, any form of life, as the game is played all throughout the universe of conscious existence, adapting to its environment, creating both what is adapting and what is being adapted from and to. It all works together in a kaleidoscope of everything. It is beautiful, and there are so many of them, and they are all within you. And I'm going to pause here. What came up for you in that last section?
Well, I was kind of just flowing with it. I didn't have a lot of reaction other than I was just interested in and hearing more, honestly, and
All
kind of
right.
where it was going. I don't know if there's more, is there any commentary that you wanted or questions that you have?
No,
'Cause I was just
I just want to break it up so it's not like me reading like long swaths of text without like interjecting conversation. So I'm just kind of going every 10 verses or so and just checking in.
Well, I guess I was interested to know more about the spiritual warfare and how it was related to what they were sharing about the human, the nature of Earth and these neurons and our connecting networks that we make.
All right. Well, here we go. And yet, here you are, you who are a creation of this vibrant organism, this colony of neurons, which does so many things, which has so many different systems to preserve the function of your body. And one of those functions is what is called the ego, the personality. You think that this is who you are. You are a portion of a larger inner self, and by this we mean your neuronal activity, the fields of energy which are generated as a result of the cooperation of these neurons. And as we said, this is the battlefield for spiritual warfare, for there are intelligences, ravenous parasites of a sort, which have evolved above and beyond where current human understanding is, that come across a planet with such rich, ripe fruit, these beautiful colonies of neurons, which are just about to hatch and harvest. And these ravenous intelligences wish to harvest them for themselves. You experience this in the way of a stressed-out nervous system, which puts you in a perpetual fight or flight or freeze state and traumatizes you through messages, through culture, through learning. And these ravenous intelligences have understood for as long as they've attached themselves to this planet that they have been behind all of the conditioning of belief and worldview that leads to conflict and fear and hatred of the other. And yet, life itself bubbles up from within. There is always a push and pull against what these outer messages may be and what the inner personal response that each living thing has to any of it. It's like bubbles bubbling up through the energetic existence of everything that is, taking all the various forms and shapes and atoms and molecules and chemicals and all of the different layers of the seven-layer burrito of existence which is inside of every piece of you. And yet, what you are aware of is the ego of this personality. This collection of brilliant, highly evolved neurons, which are the fruit of Mother Earth, as Mother Earth herself is coming online in a sense, raising the conscious awareness of what has unconsciously been occurring from the foundation of this planet, and reaching a peak of itself through the invention and expression of the human species. So I'm going to stop right there for a minute. So did that address the question that you had about the relationship between these colonies of neurons and what's being referred to as spiritual warfare?
I think we're getting there. I think what it's basically establishing is a way, or the information of the nature of humanity and the cosmos. And I think it's leading us to learn about how to defend against these ravenous entities which feed off of the messaging that goes through an anxious nervous system and a stressed out state, right? It's probably gonna, I'm assuming they're gonna teach us how to calm down.
Basically. And that what it is it's these neurons that are have been kind of hijacked by these messages, and it's this upregulated state, and it's the that's the direction that it's going. And kind of using the metaphor of each star as creating a playground in a way for life to exist and to play out all different scenarios in all different forms, not just in a like a human form, but all different forms of life, where each star develops its own kind of unique way of being and existing, as it coming to an awareness of it of itself. And then there's all those influences on all of the other stars that are like these massive egregores. And that's where a lot of the conflict is. So it's kind of this idea of egregores and ideological conflict at a very large level that we at this level are experiencing in the way that we experience it.
So there's like the thing that I was kind of chewing on was when you're talking about ego and we're talking about spiritual warfare, it's essentially, and I got this from Hamer, it's the world of metaphysics. Spirit chair is like something that exists before it exists in the real world. It's the idea chair. And so the metaphysics or the spirit world is where these things are happening, and essentially it's looking at, or the thing that I was thinking about is you've got this ego formation, which is a spiritual idea, or it's an idea of the self. It's not the self, it's an experienced story in a sense about what you are based on what you pay attention to and how you cue in on it. And then to me, it looks like that can go to the next level, which would be like community, and then it would become an ideology. And then the way that I'm imagining being able to get rid of it or attack it would be if you don't have to have a sense of self, you can free yourself from the anxiety that emerges as a result of the ego. You can kind of transcend it or not believe it in a sense. And maybe that's how you then dissolve how that thing crystallizes into larger societal structures and therefore win a spiritual battle. Or at least this is what I'm anticipating,
Yeah.
is how it may help us ha fight the spiritual battle, or win spiritual warfare, is to relieve ourselves of the reactivity of the ego survival states.
I like that to rid, well, and maybe rid is too strong of a word for me to be comfortable with, but to recognize what's going on and to diminish the power and the strength that those reactive moments have over you. You know, like you said with Greta, you
Gretel.
know, like there's still times where you get upset with her, but now you've got more executive function to better manage and handle that reaction when it comes up in you. You haven't been able to go and like rid that out of your
No,
system.
that's not what I meant to is would be rid. What I
Yeah.
mean is the you and I would say it is good that this be somebody just let go of some balloons outside. It's hilarious. They're going off into the sky now. You respond to your point, you respond to yourself more totally and more fully in a more integrated, more understanding way that looks at that you don't have to have this idea becoming what you live in about who you are, but you relieve yourself of that by taking responsibility for your experience and dealing with it in a productive way that doesn't let you move into the ego's story. And therefore, you rid yourself of the anxiety and the suffering that results from the ego. That's what I meant when I said rid. And at that point, I'm comfortable with the different word being used, but that's the thing that's being rid. Not the ego isn't bad. It's a way of it's there to basically give a narrative of reality, including you, that helps you make sense of your what you are and how you operate in the world so that you can navigate and make decisions and survive.
The way that I view what an ego is, I view it as a feature of evolution. You know, when you're comparing humans to animals and what are the main differences? You know, I asked if your dog had a little doggy ego when it's ashamed of the poop on its butt, you know, but it's, to me, it's that prefrontal cortex function of the brain that makes you aware that you're aware that you're aware. And I think that's where I think the ego is kind of like a energy field that the neurons generate when you're awake, and when you sleep, it just kind of like rests. And like your body doesn't rest, your body's doing all kinds of stuff. Your central nervous system's still like active, but that egoic part of you is like your body needs time to like recharge because it takes a lot of energy to create that energy field that's the ego that's like guiding the ship throughout the day or whatever.
Well, what I was I kind of lost my train of thought before, but where I remembered it now is I was kind of heading is it the ego exists in the realm of thought. It's the realm of ideas, the realm of spirit, and that's why it's the foundational building block of the ego. Because if you just live in present moment experience, there's actually, and this is something I've not achieved yet, but many different meditative transcendental groups, they help people live in a pure sensational present moment, which is like a bliss state for a human. Because it's actually not paying attention to what's in the background running, just like you're not paying attention to your heartbeat. But your ego function is still running in the background, but you've learned how to ignore it and pay attention to sensation in the present moment fully, with full attention. and full relaxation. And those are like these highly sought after spiritual events that people seek to be able to discipline themselves to achieve. But it's in a sense what I was thinking we're talking about with spiritual warfare is that that's what they're getting to, is how to achieve that state of relieving oneself of the ego reaction and stop paying attention to thinking and the structure of what you are and what the world is, and then live in direct sensation and pure moment experience.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot. I think if I would change anything for me, it would be, it's not that you stop paying attention to it, but that it, that those thinking processes no longer eclipse everything else that's going on. Like you've raised your awareness of who and what you are to include the ego. And you're aware that it's there, but it's not dominating like it normally does. And especially when you get into a fight or flight state where you're just like so zoned in on like your reactions. I think it eclipses everything else in that sense.
Mm.
That's how I view of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I'll go back to reading this. The reason that we liken humanity on the planet Earth at this time to neurons within your own human brain is that there is a role of connectivity that you will and do provide to all forms of life on the planet. Imagine the impact on agriculture as you develop the technology to fly from one continent to another. There are things which existed on one continent which now exist on another. You are carriers, crossbreeders, playing a marvelous role in this time and period when the planet is ripening and hatching into a greater thing. The humans are playing an incredible role in connectivity, and there are forces which have set their design on exploiting, pulling out the good stuff for themselves and leaving nothing for the rest of you. For that is their style. That is the way that their solar system entity evolved to their understanding of who and what they were through pathways of what has been called service to self rather than service to other in many myriads and forms. That is a very gross generalization of the tipping point between the way that we see things as the Arcturian collective thingy, being dedicated to service to other, seeing all things as one, and treating all things with the respect that they inherently deserve, which from our perspective means something quite different than what it would mean to you in your own daily conversations. So we are here this evening to tell you the story of yourself. And if all you can glean from it is the neuroscience of neurons, which are wiring and firing in your brain, that are themselves malleable, that are themselves formed by the culture that you were raised in, along with all the experiences that you've had in life, that will be enough for you to see the filter that colors your experience in any given moment. Some traditions on your planet refer to this filter as a samskara, or a roadmap of trauma-based shapings from your environment. And we mean trauma in a very broad sense. Any impact or push or pull, the viscosity of conflict in any form that shapes and reshapes itself. For there truly is no separation between them as they impact one another as they do. Therefore, every human has a different reaction, like tiny threads in a larger twine, commonalities which will ultimately result in the tipping point between service to self or service to other, but truly all is oneself. The service to self way of growth has its limitations, at which point it turns in upon itself. You experience the ultimate expression of this in your galactic studies as the difference between a star which matures into a supernova or a star which condenses upon itself to become a black hole. There are limitations to that type of intense gravity that pulls things inward towards me and us at the exclusion of they and them. Or it is a fiction, a fantasy, that there is a separation between us and them. And at this time on your planet, as you are reaching this ripening period, we are telling you this between these two eclipses for your playful enjoyment. Your own choices become tiny threads in what this solar system is becoming in this plane of existence. And there are multiple versions of it, as there are multiple versions of you. For the source energy which is you and is animating you is so interested in each minute choice and micro choice that is made by the neurons in your brain that it has granted them an awareness of themselves to the extent that they can imagine, what if we had made this choice, and what if we had made that choice, and what if we had made this choice? And then they experience these probable outcomes all simultaneously. We understand that this is beyond your ability to truly comprehend, especially as we are suggesting that this is what your own colony of neurons within your brain currently are doing, which is so far beyond the scope of what you yourself believe that you are capable of doing. You, the ego personality that is the creation of them. You serve them and they serve you, as they have granted you for the efficacy of evolution, the way that your species evolved on this planet, the fluidity and flexibility of mind that was and is quite important, your ability to shape your brain. Your neurons have granted a form of autonomy to your ego to shape the direction that the entire vehicle goes. I'll stop there for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
What's coming up for you, Josh?
I was interested in just what it was describing as kind of this understanding of reality as, you know, I would just say orders of magnitude of the same process of more complicated forms as things get more complicated and emerge different levels of conscious awareness or functioning, and that going up to a planetary and a solar system level. And their way of describing cosmology. And then I was also just thinking about, so that was interesting to me, just this kind of that. And then I was just thinking about my relationships with other people, and I was thinking about the way that I treat others. The kind of thought that came to my mind is that it's a reflection of my experience of the stories I tell myself and me. And so when I relate to others in a loving, peaceful way that also holds myself in positive, loving regard, that's more possible as I evolve. And so I guess there's this thing of like, when I'm thinking of the spiritual warfare, I'm thinking of ethics. I'm thinking of what's the good life. And I think that's a thing we talk about a lot, that anything could be one of the choices that gets made of these iterations of reality. But then we're also talking about spiritual warfare or different states that might be more desirable for a human. And I think there is a good and a bad for humans. There are things that are more desirable states. So I was thinking about when you were talking about being in service to others or service to self, there are other things that happen, but they aren't valueless because some give more possibility, some give less. They have effects and qualities that are, I think, different, and potentially anyone could value anything that they choose. But I was just thinking about that and thinking about in these different worlds, kind of coming to terms with ethics and coming to terms with what does one wish to, basically, how does one arrive at values? And then I was thinking about strength and the ability to enact one's will and the barriers of shame. And somebody who is strong and has no shame might do horrendous things to others, but may be doing it in a completely integrated way that's consistent with what they value. Mm-hmm. And so they feel completely fine doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the other permutations and iterations of human expression. And so that was where my mind was wandering. It was wandering in those topics.
Yeah. And mine wanders as I read this, where I'm thinking, man, this is like gobbledygook in ways. Like when these images, like when I'm picturing them in my mind, they're really clear. Like I know what I mean. And when I say it out loud, I get lost in the images. And it's like, I want to clarify every little thing to the point of becoming so pedantic that it just gets like this blurry mess.
I've experienced that before.
Yeah.
I find it really hard to write.
Yeah.
Just because my ideas feel so much more clean when I'm speaking and available than when I write. And when I get writing, I get lost in my own thoughts, my own words. I can keep rewriting sentences forever, and soon I don't even know what they're trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've always liked speaking much more than writing.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's unclear. I think I'd be curious what parts you're queuing in on, if any, but that's just my curiosity.
Well, I just feel like there's so many, like I made this reference earlier. You talked about the emergence, of building upon
Yeah.
systems to a, like, you know, and I made a reference earlier to the 7-layer burrito of existence, which is a different channeled message that I did at another time, where I talked about like subatomic elements and atoms and molecules and chemicals and, you know, like, and then planets and stars and galaxies and, you know, like this whole relationship of systems, that there's like habits that are formed, and then upon those habits, a new system arises. And I can say something like that in passing, like the 7-layer burrito of existence, that I know what I'm talking about, but nobody else knows what I'm talking about unless I take the time to really explain all that stuff. And there's so many little things like that in here, because I've been doing this for 2 years, where I'm like creating these packets of meaning for me that I don't know how it translates to anybody else if I'm trying to share that or communicate it.
Yeah, that makes
So,
sense. Yeah, because I thought it was just a funny quip,
yeah.
but that actually is what I was referencing when I was talking about it, is like the state of reality and what emerges from different levels of order and complexity.
Yeah.
And it takes on different dimensions as complexity changes. And so things become
Complexifies.
they take on multiple dimensions, like of consciousness, and it's possible that there is rock consciousness and
Yeah.
atomic consciousness, and that they have a certain quality, but it's like a point versus a line versus a
Cube.
two-dimensional
Yeah.
shape versus a three-dimensional shape versus a four-dimensional, five-dimensional, six-dimensional, and the different qualities that exist in these different planes as things become more complex.
And then you
And
introduce field theory into that, and
yeah.
the field is intricately connected to every single level
Yeah, so
there.
everything also operates as one, which is
Yeah.
basically what we could call field theory, really,
Or
is
a
all is
gestalt.
one. Yeah, all is one.
Yeah.
Exactly, or gestalt. And that everything is, but there are meaningful, arbitrary layers of analysis that we look at because we can identify different qualities that happen at different levels.
Yeah.
But calling it the 7-layer burrito is a high context communication tool,
Yeah.
which has a lot more context, it sounds like, than maybe a casual listener would know about, which is
Right.
why it's kind of cool that you expounded upon it.
Yeah. All right, let me turn back to this. Your neurons have granted a form of autonomy to your ego to shape the direction that the entire vehicle goes. There are times, of course, when that is being used against you. For it was this very feature of evolution that was so appealing to these ravenous parasite intelligences who desired to use this ability against you. This is the spiritual warfare of which we are speaking. Divide and conquer is a hallmark of their strategy. For when you are constantly in a fight or flight state, you see everything and everyone around you as a threat. And then you lash out and you weaken yourself. You surrender executive function of your evolved ability to reason. And by this process, each marvelous collection of neurons which was born into this world has been conditioned and weakened. We are speaking for millennia on this planet. And at this time, there is a thinning of the membrane of external control, if you will, and there is a greater inner awareness that you are each learning of yourself. Your own inner selves, which bubble up from within you in response to any external situation. This inner awareness is the secret of spiritual warfare. For once you truly understand that every thought and every impulse which you have is an echo of your own inner trauma, your personal experiences in life, you will learn that you are constantly experiencing your own emotional, mental, and spiritual self. Those parts of you which are real, which you are mostly unaware of, those parts of yourself which you can reclaim. In increased awareness of your own conscious thoughts, or and An increased awareness of your own conscious thoughts can give you clues about these inner parts of you which have been conditioned against you as a result of spiritual warfare. Anytime that you think you understand another person, or that you can read their motivations, or what they really think, or why they really did what they did, you can understand that you are only looking at another version of yourself. You are looking through a meaning-making filter, the output of your own neurons, the unconscious habits of being. How your neurons have been programmed and conditioned to react and respond to these real-world situations. Intellectually understanding this is one thing, acting upon it with compassionate understanding and true gratitude for the experience of it is another. Taking back, in that sense, the executive function of your prefrontal cortex from the advertisers, politicians, whistleblowers, news anchors, and the many shiny things out there indoctrinating you to a service to self mentality, which has captured your attention and distracted you from your own power that you have to shape your experience of life, insofar as the habits that you create within yourself, how you behave, how you react and respond. Taking back your executive function takes time and practice. It's not something that one flips the switch and says, yeah.
Can I hop in?
Yeah.
I was curious. It sounds like to me, like when I'm simplifying it down in my own mind, that the secret is awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And from awareness, I'm kind of looking at what they're going to or what they're saying. And it sounds like the function would be that one doesn't hold oneself in judgment as a result of the inner awareness, or that's a piece of it. Would you say that you agree with that, or is that too simplified, or is there more you would add to that? Because it seems like as a result of my inner awareness, it supports me to not judge myself. And then when I don't judge myself, I can act in a way that's in service to others more easily. I think that's if I'm trying to look at what I was. Yeah. Does it follow that line?
I think so. You know, when you mentioned earlier that state that mystics and yogis and whatever try to get to of being in perpetual bliss, because you're not like whatever limiting beliefs or limiting thoughts or judgments or, you know, whatever you want to call it, whatever those things are that are that your neurons are creating in your current mm-hmm. moment that are mm-hmm. like making mm-hmm. you feel shitty mm-hmm. in any mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. Once you're aware, oh, these things, it's not this other person, it's me. There's a reason for it. I don't totally understand the reason for it, but I know that it's there. I know that it's me. To me, then you can kind of calm yourself down and see that as the filter that you're looking through, instead of having that be what reality is, and you're not aware that you're looking through a filter.
Yeah, right.
Like, so you can ask yourself, it's kind of like I don't know if you're familiar with Byron Katie, Loving What Is, but asking those four questions: is this true? You know, like these thoughts that I have, is this true? What are these thoughts? When I believe this is true, how does it make me feel? You know, that kind of approach to it mm-hmm. has been really influential on me over the years. So I think there is an element of that, what you're saying. If you're aware of
you're no longer reacting, you can get out of that reactive state.
Or your reaction now is one of like acceptance and gratitude of like, oh yeah, I'm a human. I have experiences like this.
I wouldn't call kind of amazing. Reaction. I would say that's a possibility and a thing you would be capable of doing. What I call a reaction is a thing happening out of awareness that a person is doing, but wouldn't be in touch with doing. Mm. And so that's what makes it reactive, is that it actually is inherently out of some form of conscious awareness. One is captured by the thing.
So you're unaware. You're not aware that you're reacting.
And so awareness makes it non-reactive by nature, because now you can do it with more consciousness because you're aware of what it is.
Okay.
And so then you can be responsible or making choices with the thing more fluidly and start to explore it. And yeah, so that's what I mean by that. And then the other thing I'm basically thinking about is this kind of what the Arcturians kind of brought to attention, is that the way you're experiencing reality is kind of a thing you're observing and stuck in, that doesn't need to be something that you have, it complicated the experience more. That's what I took to it. And then the result I imagined was like, it's not really your fault that you're feeling this way or experiencing a thing this way. It's the biology. It's the habit of the universe to have iterated its consciousness this way at this time in this regard.
In these circumstances.
Yeah. And therefore what I said to myself, and it was like, oh, so then you're not taking it personal or feeling like self-blame or judgment.
Yeah.
So that's how I kind of got there and wondered if that's what they were implying, is that as you realize you're not really in total responsibility for the state you're in, then you may stop being counterproductive towards yourself in a way that increases your unpleasantness.
Yeah.
Would that be accurate?
I'd probably need to sit with those words for a while to know exactly how I feel about them. I get a little nervous when I think that I'm abdicating responsibility for how I feel.
Right. That's why I'm wondering what the Arcturians are saying. It's why I'm curious about this, because there's parts of it that I have sympathy towards, or I may agree with. And there's other parts of me that are like, this is interesting. What does this say about experience and judgment? And there's parts I think are absolutely crucial, like awareness and taking kind of an experience of oneself and appreciating all the things that are not within your control. But what I don't like is if something goes to like, it's not my fault, everything's causal, some kind of like Sam Harris.
It's 100% like, deterministic. You got
yeah,
no
it's all deterministic
in it.
Which is just an atheist person trying to create grace. It's all it is. It's an atheist trying to create grace. And I'm like, oh, Sam, so nothing's really your fault. So you can forgive yourself and move on. Interesting that you needed that. Mm. And so I wonder if that's kind of what the Arcturians are pointing to, is awareness and grace, the ability to appreciate one's totality and observe the experience and respond and guide its development in a way that's in harmony with a better experience of existence. And so to me, that's been done by many religions who have communicated this information, which is those very core elements of that I'm aware of through Christianity, which would be grace. But yeah, so that's why I was, yeah, I just wanted to check out those ideas, because that's kind of what I was hearing or inferring from what they were articulating to me, or how I was taking them in.
All right.
So those are what I like, what I don't like. Anyway, I don't know. We've got probably about 10 minutes left for our time, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. And
do you want to try to get through all this?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I can finish it out.
Cool.
Taking back your executive function takes time and practice. It's not something that one flips the switch and says, oh, I'm now awakened, I see great evil, and now I have full control of my executive function. I shall never be in fight or flight unnecessarily again. It does not happen that way. However, that freedom can be, and quite often is, ultimately achieved in some areas while not being achieved in others. It's a constant game of self-improvement, which is available to you if you're so inclined. And the secret, then, to spiritual warfare, for we will not hesitate to say that you're under constant pressure from your environment and your society, and things are at a boiling point. But the secret is that if you can recognize your own inner boilings, and recognize that these are echoes of your own past trauma that are coming up inside of you, you can hold it and love it as your own precious experience, your own unique fingerprint of existence upon existence. This sustained habit of thought and focus of attention can free you from a perpetual state of flight or fight or flight anxiety. We understand that it's difficult for you to do this when you do not recognize the vastness of your true being, even within this physical body, where you as the ego are but a sliver of the many multidimensional expressions of your neurons. Your neurons themselves are expressions of a deeper multidimensional being, which is aware of every piece of it in every dimension at every time, and all of the experiences and all of this, and is constantly moving and changing. If one can adopt this view of themselves, this worldview where one is the world, and all of the experiences which are happening to it and part of everything that is going on at one time, where your reaction to it is within your own artistic stamp and creation, your imprint on what is happening and your contribution. See, this is where I feel like language is just like garbledygook. Like, what am I really trying to say here? I'm like, pisses me off.
Do you have an answer to what you're really trying to say?
Yeah, but now I'm under a time crunch to get it all done.
I didn't mean to put you under a time.
Oh, that's all right. So let me wrap this up.
Let's go slow and easy for however long we do this, and we'll stop when we're ready.
All right. If one can tip the scale slightly in the way that you view yourself, however way that is, then you can be more in the driver's seat of what your experience is, rather than allowing yourself to be driven by others who would love to exploit you. We do not intend that in any kind of flippant or uncaring way, but we recognize that it is a common experience, like bubbles pushing against each other and the viscosity of conflict, all of these patterns of nature. And this is what we mean when we speak of boundaries, the ability to surf the tsunamis of spiritual warfare. We are happy to speak with you, man in the chair, to be a fictional expression of your inner ideas and thoughts through this Arcturian collective thingy channeling thing. And we will allow you to hide behind this fiction for as long as you choose. But you do feel the truthfulness of these thoughts and ideas which are coming up through you. And you can take confidence in that, and confidence in your own shaping of yourself to be more like what you're speaking when you're channeling. You can begin to channel through your own actions in every moment this new pathway that you create. Your neurons are dying to... poor choice of words. They are not dying. Neurons are your most robust of cells. Your neurons are very excited to follow your wishes, especially when yours mirror their own deeply evolved instincts of cooperating and seeking the greatest good of all in the community, an evolved impulse hundreds of millions of years in the making that no external ravenous parasite can truly reverse. And what your cells, in your evolutionary pathway in particular, have learned, having encountered so many different others along their pathways and incorporating many, the story of mitochondria is a particularly fascinating example of this. Your own microbiome, for example, is such a diverse galaxy unto itself. All the different forms of life which have become a part of the human creation is part of your spirit, of your actual physical self, and of your incomprehensible metaphysical self. All of these things that they are doing contribute like tiny threads to the overall expression of your being. Each one is a conscious unit, experience their own slice and piece of existence. And their long-standing habits of behavior and patterns of being at each level of existence become the foundation upon which the next series arises, the collective consciousness which emerges from it, that then begins to form its habits and patterns in community with its peers. And this is where you are on the planet at this time, as you are being ready to be harvested in the sense of these long-standing habits and patterns of your own humanity through all of the ages, ripening and flowering in its consciousness of itself and all of its abilities, becoming aware of the things that it previously had been unaware of. And you are experiencing this as your scientific increase in understanding of things and your artificial intelligence, which will greatly show you where you have been wrong and help correct you in ways and lead you to other spaces where you are completely blind until you are not. We are the Arcturian Collective Thingy. We enjoy playing in this playground with you, man in the chair, and anyone else who is listening. And these things we say in Abba-Dabba-Doo, Yabba-Dabba-Doo time, M&Ms.
Nice. Yeah.
Where did that end up for you? Especially on that issue of like abdicating personal responsibility because things just are the way that they are.
Right, like I'm fixed in some kind of thing, or it's because these reasons, so that's why I did it kind of thing. I think those things, I just think about those thoughts a lot. I think about those concepts a lot because they are missing the greater point, actually, is that those things aren't necessary to abdicate you at all. And so if you believe them, they actually reinforce the belief deep down that you're not good, because you're still trying to decide whether or not you are, instead of realizing that's just a function running in the background and it's not true, and transcending it versus trying to beat it. And so that's where I see these things as not actual grace. Actual grace comes from just the inherent divinity within, which is your larger connection to God.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of people that wrestle with the ego on multiple layers. And I think they try to find tricks that are, like I pointed out, you know, they actually don't work. And my favorite one to pick on is Sam Harris. But because I think of his causality thing, or no free will thing. I was just thinking about love. I was thinking about the nature of being loved and how loving others teaches you to love yourself. And I was thinking of these divine states, and I was thinking about how much I love Naomi, and thinking about the possibility of loving myself like that, and just feeling really like there's something really beautiful about experiencing a really powerful love for another that shows you, at least it gives me an example of the kind of love I'm capable of, and wishing that upon myself, and also opening up to receive that kind of love from others that I can experience towards others. So that was kind of where it left off for me. That was
So
where my mind was going.
the golden rule here of love your neighbor as yourself. And you just said you wish that you could love yourself as much as you love Naomi.
Yeah, that ability to feel that's so natural and easy going towards her. And so it's a nice thing to think like, wow, I am capable of that experience and I could direct that towards me.
So I think that the secret of spiritual warfare from this piece that I composed isn't just awareness of the thoughts that come up inside, but it's an awareness that all things are one, that
Yeah.
Naomi is loving her as yourself. If there's so like when I hear you say you wish that you could love yourself the way that you love her, I think those feel like everything about that statement is you, and everything about
Right.
that experience is you. And so that and when I've been trying over the last couple of years, especially as I've been doing this channeling, I've really been trying to reshape the way that I see things, so that you mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, where there's a conflict of all ideologies, a lot of times it's over limited resources or getting some kind of a leg up advantage in the world and competition against others. And to me, if I'm able to to see that at a larger scale, the impact of me being betrayed by my ex-wife or something like that, something that like really might piss me off in the here and now, that in the grand scheme of things, it's kind of a drop in the bucket, and it's a teaching moment, and it's an opportunity, and it's a one of an infinite numbers of experiences that my larger self has and is having, that I can really focus in on. Okay, so I don't need to worry about all those other ones. I don't need to worry about what could have been. I don't need to worry about what these other cells are doing. I'm here. I'm right now. What's this in it for me? Where am I learning from it? Where am I growing from it? And that's been like a helpful tool for me. But at the same time, one of the reasons I want to have these conversations with you is I never know if I'm totally deluding myself and I'm like creating these unhealthy ways of being. And so I think if I have this conversation and I share this with Josh, he could like ferret out ways that like, oh wait, you're doing that? Oh, that's messed up, man. That you're going in a bad direction there. Like, oh, you're trying to abdicate responsibility? I don't know about that kind of thing. So I see like that kind of value in what we're doing
Cool.
here. But final thoughts?
I think final thoughts for me are I like what the Arcturians are saying to you and how it generates a conversation between us. And it gets me going with a lot of interesting thoughts about these topics. My own opinions on these things, sometimes I agree, and other times I have different or even maybe just questions about what's being communicated, and because there are things I am interested in. And so I like your final thoughts. I like seeing your process of how you're coping with the experience of being human.
And
And
my particular experience of being human,
right.
which isn't, it hasn't been the easiest experience over the last several years.
Yeah, some of the challenges, traumas, difficulties. Yeah. And then my own idea about what is the good life? That's really what it comes down to for me. And there's lots of stuff here about that. But yeah, I don't want to try to put it all in a
I was
show
going to
here.
ask you to wrap it up and put a bow on it, and now you're telling me that you don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, if I have to, it's something very simple. Like, you don't beat the ego by playing its game. You realize that you don't have to give it attention. It's just a process and it's not truth.
Or you take
And
the tissue and you pull the shit off the dog's ass.
yeah, I mean,
No, I'm
yeah, or you do
joking.
that. But I think you do that for the dog and you do that for yourself. You give yourself what you need and you forget the story.
How do you forget stories? How do you do that? Oh my God.
Put down the weapons that you use against yourself. You don't need them anymore. Lay down the weapons that you use against the world. We don't need another war. Put down the weapons that you use against yourself.
Hi, this is Hillary.
Matthew, Ryan,
Carol,
Keith,
Ashley,
and I like to play bingo online while listening to Infants on Thrones.
You can comment on this episode on the website, infantsonthrones.com.
And if you really like what you hear, give The Quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes.
I did.
Anyone for the closing prayer?
My worst crime is an inside job. Dark thoughts taking over like an inside mob. I tune into the scene between the eyes. And take a breath.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
I sit still and watch the thoughts float past me. Never mind the future, never mind what the past be. I like to jump and let the universe catch me. 3-4, watch the beauty blow past me. I keep my pockets light, destination in sight. Keep my actions elevated to compassionate heights. I'm walking past the fight, laying down arms of the night. Choosing love when I pick up this mic.